But right now we are at the 11 o'clock program, AI litigation and legislative roundup. If you were here, hopefully yesterday, you got to hear Stan Sucher do a roundup yesterday of cases in entertainment law, which was is always terrific, and we're appreciative for him doing that, and we get to have him come back again this morning. So I won't belabor his introduction again, as you heard it yesterday, but Stan is an award-winning journalist and author and the longtime editor-in-chief of Entertainment Law and Finance, is Professor Emeritus of Music and Entertainment Industry Studies at the University of Colorado, Denver. And this is, as I think was mentioned yesterday, but worth repeating, his 23rd consecutive year presenting at the annual Entertainment Law Institute. And he's also one of the planning team members. So again, doing double duty, both in putting this together and presenting. So with that, I'll bring Stan Sucher up for our next program. Thanks, Stan.
Thank you for the interruption, Daniel. Wait a minute, Freudian slip. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, I like that one. I'll use it another time. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back. And we'll go another round. This time is the, you can see from the title here, the AI litigation roundup and legislative roundup. Now, originally we planned and was on the schedule to have Thomas Cleese, who's the director of public policy from the Recording Industry Association of America, to cover the legislative issues. So I'll primarily focus on the litigation and then make some comments about the three key pieces of proposed federal legislation on AI that are most important to the entertainment industry. And in the written materials, in the course book, Thomas did send in a few pages. The last several pages have a summary of the key points for each piece of legislation. So might as well get started here. So just a brief intro. I mean, so much is said about artificial intelligence, and we just heard a great presentation from the guilds, unions point of view just before this. So, but one interesting thing here is, and it's no surprise, but just this copy leak study talking about that more than 45% of the AI program's generative output was identical to pre-existing works. Not that it was made of pre-existing works, which is 100%, just a pretty much, of what is fed into the AI programs that then generate content output based on what users are requesting it to do. So that's very, very significant, and particularly in the case, there have been several dozen cases now around the country dealing with content owners suing creators of AI programs. Now, in one of the cases with the New York Times, it's in New York, that case talks specifically about actual New York Times articles being outputted by users of the defendant's AI program. So that's what this 45% of actually, no difference between the two. So that's a really startling thing, since, as we'll see, and I'm sure you already know, a key defense in these cases is that the AI programs are, they are arguing that they are involved in fair use, so that they don't need licenses. All right, so let's move along to, in the first case here, and I put this in because there was some oral arguments recently before the U.S. Court of Appeals of the D.C. Circuit on this case. But this is the one, and last year at the Entertainment Law Institute, there was a great, John Riley from the Copyright Office gave a great presentation talking about the copyright's point of view on how they consider AI created content registrations, whether or not it's copyrightable and acceptable. And of course, so what is the Copyright Office's policy is, and they're asking the submitter of the applications to the submitters to indicate what was created by a human being and what was created by AI. So in this case, we have a copyright registration form that was filed. The underlying case was decided in 2023, the D.C. District Court there, Federal District Court. Stephen Thaler, he created the program that created this AI visual work, a recent entrance to paradise.